You're listening to Sunnyside Up, a B2B podcast that brings you the juiciest insights from go-to-market leaders and practitioners.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Sunnyside Up. I'm your host, Chris Moody. Today, I'm very excited to talk to Jill Canada on creating new markets and implementing disruptive technology. Jill currently serves as the Vice President of Commercial at Mendera, a Silicon Valley-based healthcare technology company developing a platform that combines robotics, real-time imaging, AI, and connectivity. You know, those are all topics we're focused on every single day. And before Mendera, Jill served as the Vice President of Corporate and Enterprise Sales and a key member of the executive team at Avell Med Systems, where she led a dynamic team dedicated to supporting some of the healthcare sector's largest and most influential entities. Jill, thanks so much for joining us today. Really excited to have you on the show.
Absolutely thrilled to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's jump right in. I know that we talked a little bit on the prep call about creating new markets and implementing disruptive technology. And I know you've done that at multiple companies. So I'd love for you to speak to the challenges you faced in creating new markets.
Absolutely. So first of all, creating a new market is definitely not for the faint of heart, especially in healthcare. That's the sector that I've spent my career in. Has a very complex regulatory environment, and anyone trying to create a new product, let alone a new market, really does need seasoned guidance in that area, because the regulatory decisions and the pathway that you choose from the beginning is going to have downstream implications for years to come, to the positive or the negative. On the Avell side, we were really fortunate to have those early decisions be very positive as we were creating that surgical telepresence market. But keep in mind, the reverse can be true. So those early decisions really do impact the business for years to come. And I would say the other hard truth about creating new markets is that it is expensive and always takes more time and arguably money than you're expecting. No matter how many smart minds you have in the room, no matter how seasoned your board and leadership team is, it's going to take longer and take more money than you originally thought about. Of course, there's that substantial R&D investment just to create the product. If you're creating something that, you know, has a tangible plan to address a pain point in the market. And then, as listeners to this podcast will know, the marketing team is absolutely critical. So thinking about creating a new market goes as far back to even what are we going to call this market if it's truly brand new. And what we were doing, and you know, what we ended up calling surgical telepresence, we went through a variety of iterations of, is it procedural telemedicine, you know, or do we land on surgical telepresence? So as simple as that sounds, just naming what you are going to create is another huge factor. And that's where our awesome marketing colleagues come in. I would say I've been involved in market creation in both large strategics and in startups. And one of the most important things on the startup side is to find that beachhead with the right product market fit. So what you initially believe will be the beachhead may not end up being it. There's a, you know, famous example people talk about with Intuitive Surgical a lot, where they thought cardiac surgery was going to be the beginning. So they have a saying, the early Intuitive team members, of we aimed for the heart and landed in the prostate. And they were obviously able to adjust that beachhead from what they thought. But having a beachhead is incredibly important from my experience. And you'll also need focus. So it can be very tempting to try to be all things to all people, particularly as you are trying to gain utilization or users, you know, depending on how your business is structured. But one thing that I have realized over years in this business is that sometimes success is defined by what you say no to as much as what you say yes to. And any size company, we all know every company has finite resources, but those finite resources are existential in the startup world. And so it's just something that's been, you know, finely tuned over the years. Keep in mind, you can't say yes to everything, can't be all things to all people. And then I would say, going back to those in large strategics, or if you're coming from large strategics and established markets, there's one trap that I've seen people fall into, which is to focus obsessively on what the competitors in the market are doing. And when we're talking about market creation, that shouldn't be the focus. So not what any other competitor is doing for, you know, if you spend your precious time and resources and attention on them, then you're missing the big picture, which is the rest of the market, that total addressable market that you're going after. That's where the time and resources and vision should be spent, not the, you know, maybe less than 1% that another competitor has. And if you're creating a market, it's likely even less than them. So just keep in mind, you know, if you're forging a path, it's very different than being in an established market where you have very defined competitors and you're just arguing over market share.
Love that. There's so many great things you mentioned there. I mean, focus, we could spend a whole episode on focus. We could spend a whole episode on, you know, really being confident in what you call the category, because we run into that, the confusion around account-based marketing, right? Like, it's really account-based sales and marketing and customer success, all the things, right? Like, there's so much to dive into. A couple times you hit on the people and the team. And I know that we are all challenged to do more with less, no matter how large our company is. So how do you think about building teams to implement disruptive technology, knowing that you have to knock it out of the park with every single hire?
Absolutely. It's a really great question. And I would say that there are some fundamental truths that apply to all professional team building, not just for disruptive technology. So I'll spend some time focused on that. And really, you need a strategic and thoughtful approach to building that team. I think one of the most important things is having a diverse set of experiences and being able to foster collaboration. And I'm big into team empowerment. So empowering those team members, that is critical when you're trying to innovate in a new space. And if you don't have empowerment, you're never going to get the results or have the culture you want from the team to innovate in the way that you want. So having that multidisciplinary team is absolutely critical. I would say, you know, I'm coming from the healthcare market. And so for us, you have to think about someone that has a background in healthcare and in technology, in our world, in data analytics, project management, change management, of course, commercialization. And I haven't even covered all of them. That's just some very broad categories. And I would say for everything I've just mentioned, all of these are critical and none of those are optional. And sometimes, you know, it's easy to forget or over-index on one set of expertise when really they're all critical. Again, back to if we're in the game of innovation, you must have a culture where experimentation is appropriate, is accepted, is encouraged, and then you can have learning from that experimentation. If you're going to implement disruptive technology, you've got to be able to iterate and learn from failure, and failure has to be okay. So valuing responsible risk-taking and continuous learning is the only ticket in my mind to continuous innovation. And I would say one of the things I love most about being at Mendera is that culture piece. So the co-founders, Josh DeFonso and Jason Wilson, used the totality of their careers, which also included both large strategics and then startups, but used that totality of experience to envision the culture that they wanted at Mendera. And it absolutely shows in everything that the business does. They're huge on empowerment and the learning culture. It's like nothing I've ever experienced, and I personally love it. And it provides the innovation, you know, necessary to do what we're trying to do here. Also being marketing focused here, I have to say another shout out to marketing colleagues here. So one of my favorite marketing leaders of all times is Michelle Stevens. And she was guiding me last week on how much words matter. So on this topic today, we were discussing disruptive technology. And Michelle reminded me that even the term disruptive technology can be problematic depending on the audience. So in the startup world and in B2B scenarios, and we're talking with technology companies, we toss that around and it is understood and supported and encouraged. But when we're talking to clients, so for example, no hospital COO wants to hear a company come in and talk about disruptive technology, because what they hear is a massive headache. You know, we might think that we're talking about innovation and process improvement, and what they hear is, this sounds like a frustration and a headache to my already overwhelmed workforce. So it's just another reminder not just in naming the category, but how you're speaking to your clients really matters in the words that you use. And Michelle's always there to remind me of these things.
That's awesome. Yeah, shout out, Michelle. We're living that one too. I mean, the industry, ABM, account-based marketing, it's somewhat condescending to sales, right? Like sales leads a lot of the effort, and we have to make sure we are talking about it the right way. So we're working on some of the changes in how we approach the category just based on the words. So I think that's extremely important. And we could argue that the health industry may have had as much change as any industry over the last 10 years with COVID and all the other technological developments that have come from that too. But what are some of the lessons you've learned in change management throughout your career?
Yeah, I think the change management topic really does tie together everything we've talked about so far. Change management is really one of the most important, yet I would argue least understood parts of creating a new market, particularly when we're talking about disruptive technology. You can create a product with all of the right product market fit. You can have a thoughtful pricing strategy, all the right regulatory and legal approaches and things we talked about up at the top. But if you can't figure out how to guide that client through the workflow change, then unfortunately, nothing else matters. So when I think about change management, I think a few key pillars. So first being communication. Of course, you've got to build that foundational awareness and then buy-in. Engaging and involving stakeholders, making sure the right voices are heard and that you've captured the right subject matter experts throughout the process. And then just know this is common every time you're changing a process. There will be resistance and barriers. Status quo is simply hard to change. So just knowing from the jump that there will be individuals, and I would argue often groups of people that are resistant, you know, maybe hesitant at best or flat out opposed to change in a more typical scenario. So not being surprised with that and having it be an expected part of the process is important. And then training and support is so important. Change management often lives and dies on those areas. So having that planned out in advance is important. And then finally, just being able to monitor progress and adapt. So based on my own experience, I would say sometimes companies think about change management as being extra credit or optional or resources that they may not need, or we'll bring that in if we can afford it in the budget or the first thing to get caught, to get cut. But it just simply isn't optional, especially when you're thinking about new markets and disruptive technology. One of the most successful leaders I can think of in market development understands this really begins and ends with change management. And there's really no other way to disrupt the status quo than to understand that part deeply. Because otherwise, again, your clients are hearing that it's just a big burden for change and are going to be starting from a frame of mind that is not helpful.
Love that. I love that. And you've talked about some of the startup energy that we all need, no matter the size of the company, and some of the larger organizations you've worked at. Knowing you've been at GE and Roche, and then startups like Avell and Mandera, what are some of the comparisons you would make to those experiences and maybe some learnings or takeaways there?
So that's also such a great question. And I think there's honestly more similarities than differences. So much of what I hear when we're discussing the talent fit for an open role is labeling people into either camp or the other. So, oh, that's a startup person, or that's a big company person. And my own experience leads me to believe that it's just not that big of a distinction. So as you said at the outset, for me, I, you know, grew up in big companies and don't regret a minute of my time there. The amount of resources and training and mentorship and just overall leadership and business lessons that I gained from a big company was absolutely critical and informs everything I have done as a leader since then. But I would also say that everything I learned at a big company is pretty much applicable in startup land as well. And it just doesn't have to be this either or decision. You know, leadership is leadership. There's so many qualities that make you successful or challenged in any size of an organization. And I just think it's too simple to label people really as one or the other. So in my role today, it's to commercialize a new product at Mendera, which is one of the most challenging tasks that there is, to take a product through, you know, ideation to commercialization. But it is endlessly interesting. So for me, I personally feel so much energy in the startup world to go from idea to execution with lightning speed. And being on the leadership team in a startup means direct accountability to results. There's nowhere to hide, which I love. So I first learned about that, you know, the power of accountability in the big company world. GE is known for that, but that very direct accountability to results is part of my daily life now. And I also thrive on that. And then the last thing I'd say about the speed of startups is just addictive to me. Also, there's huge, big strategics with amazing visions and missions, but sometimes the tie to purpose can be even closer in the startup world. So we can see results from essentially any lever we pull. You're going to see those results fairly quickly. And, you know, back to the earlier point, that brings great responsibility, but also great reward. And then it goes without saying, stating the obvious, that you have to have a strong risk tolerance to work for an early stage company. But if you have that appetite for risk tolerance, then you get the camaraderie and shared purpose and just direct visibility from your actions to results that startups afford in a unique way.
Yeah. Awesome stuff there. I mean, I would plus one everything you said. I think sometimes in the big companies, you become skillful at building consensus and alignment and buy-in. And then at the startups, you have the pace and the ownership, and you have to combine those no matter where you're at. Like, you can't do it all yourself. So for those who are listening and maybe trying to disrupt, now we might not use that word with the customers, right? Like with the COO, but for those who are trying to disrupt an existing market with new technology, what are some of the takeaways or advice that you would give them?
It goes a little bit back to the beginning, and it's worth repeating that if you're creating a market, again, it's going to be more expensive and take longer than your business plan suggested. And that is a hard truth, but it doesn't make it any less true. So if you're in startup land like I am now, then you want to make sure you're backed by investors that understand the sector you're in. Again, for me, it's healthcare, and understand market creation in that market. So I feel very lucky and blessed to have worked in businesses that have exceptional boards who are there at all the right times, providing wise counsel in addition to funding when it's needed most. So aligning your business objectives to investors that have, you know, similar thought process and what they're looking for from the business, and, you know, have been there and are going to provide you a balanced set of advice and connections and all of the things that can come from a wise counsel of a great board. And I've been so lucky to have that in each of the startups I've worked for.
Yeah, that's awesome. I always say there's good money and bad money, right? Like, you really need those people supporting the business. The great stuff there. And as we come up on time, we like to close out with a couple common questions. The first, it's on Goodreads, watches, listens, whatever. Is there a book, blog, newsletter, website, or video that you would recommend to our listeners?
So I personally am a huge podcast listener. So besides the obvious, the podcast that we're listening to of Sunnyside Up, some of the other podcasts that I love listening to would be, since my world is the med tech space, so Device Talks Weekly with Tom Salemi does such a nice job. Sometimes there's businesses that I had no visibility to, and just always interesting to learn a new therapy or care area or just how another business is approaching the market. Kayleen Brown also does a great job with MedTech Women Talks, which is a spinoff. MedTech Women is just an outstanding organization, and interviewing women leaders from around MedTech has been a great series that Kayleen has done. And then just for a daily dose of MedTech to keep in touch with the headlines, since I don't always have time to read everything I want to, Sean Hooley and Danielle Kirsch do a nice job with the Fast Five podcast. So that's just the top five news stories in MedTech from the day before. And that helps me never miss any relevant news, especially if I don't have time to read something that morning. And then just more general, I love all things the Huberman Lab with Andrew Huberman, does such a nice job on everything science and health related. And then I'm obsessed with Adam Grant and Work Life. He does a great job as an organizational psychologist. It just helps me, you know, understand all of the areas and things we're working through from a work and leadership and just organizational psychology standpoint.
Great recommendations there. And then the last question before the most important one, are there any folks that you recommend that we should bring to the show in the B2B space that you may find inspirational or love their work?
That is a great question. I'm going to give you three completely different ideas of people to connect with. So one, I would suggest Heidi Seerden, who is the president of the ultrasound business at GE Healthcare, just a phenomenal leader that I've had the opportunity to work nearby for many years, and she would have a lot of insight to share in this market. Also might suggest Holly Scott of the Mullings Group. She is also an outstanding leader and so in tune from a different perspective, coming from a recruiting firm. She's got a whole different take on this market and the business, but endless insight every time I read something that Holly has published or hear her speak or get to spend time together with her in person. Since we've spent a fair amount of time on the startup world, another great connection would be Daniel Hawkins. I interacted with him at Avail when he was the founder and CEO of Avail, but also referenced some of the other areas of his past. He was in the early days of Intuitive, was employee number 6, and then also just had some major M&A news when another company he founded and was the principal inventor for, Shockwave, just got acquired by J&J. So that was news last week. So taking that entrepreneurial journey full circle. So those would be three great people to get to know.
Perfect. We will reach out to them. Thank you again. And then the most important question, how can people get in touch with you after the podcast?
I would say LinkedIn is probably the best way to reach me. Even better to drop a note to say you heard this podcast, and I will know where the connection is coming from. But I'm fairly active on LinkedIn and would love to connect. So lots of interesting topics, and I love getting to confer with other subject matter experts in each of these areas.
Thank you so much, Jill. We really appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining the show.
Today's episode is made possible by Demandbase. Demandbase is smarter GTM for B2B brands to help marketing and sales teams spot the juiciest opportunities earlier and progress them faster. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Sunnyside Up. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review us and subscribe to our show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube and Demandbase TV.